The Ric Flair Show.
My name's Ric Flair.
Woo! Woo! To be the man, you gotta beat the man. And I'm saying, woo! Right here, I'm the man.
The 16-time world champion.
Woo! Back behind the mic and telling it like it is.
Woo!
If you're not carrying the big gold, you're second best no matter what you tell yourself.
I'm the best. Y'all playing catch-up ball.
To the nature boy.
And now, your hosts of the Ric Flair Show, Ric Flair and Conrad Thompson.
Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ric Flair, 16 times your world champion, the host of the Ric Flair Show, along with my legendary, and I do mean legendary, co-host, Conrad, by God, Thompson, the second wealthiest man in the state of Alabama, home owner of the Conradison Estate, atop a mountaintop in Huntsville, Alabama, largest home in the state of Alabama, right there with the Biltmore Mansion in Asheville. Need I say more? Conrad, how are you, sir?
I'm good, dude. How are you?
Good, buddy. The Hammer. How you doing, kid?
Good. I'm sitting out here on the patio on the beach. North Reddington Beach is beautiful this morning.
Oh, awesome, awesome. Well, you know, it's funny that we see each other so rarely, but when we do, we always end up laughing. And so many great memories, many great stories. You know, for a lot of the fans out there, that most of them, I think, know this. A lot of them might not, but I first traveled and worked with Greg's father, Johnny Valentine. And John was in the plane crash with me in 1975 that ultimately left him paralyzed from the waist down. So when that happened, George Scott put the call into Greg. And Greg, you can bring us up to par on a lot, or bring us up to speed and all that. But at the time, Greg was traveling around with Don Fargo. You'll have to tell.
Yeah, that was a good. That was a good education.
Yeah, you'll have to tell a couple of Don Fargo stories.
Yeah, they were very, very craziness. I mean, you were tame compared to him, but you weren't that tame.
I was coming out of the Don Fargo. Nice.
you didn't have your dick pierced, and then you ran a chain up to your ear that was pierced, and walk around a bunch of girls. That's what Fargo did.
Oh my gosh!
And he'd see a woman at a party or something, and he'd say, "Let me see your earrings." He'd take it off, and he'd whip the thing out and put it in his weenie.
Oh my gosh.
No, I've been guilty of a lot of things, but that's not one of them. Jesus.
He used to walk around the dressing room naked, and he'd ask everybody where his toothbrush, if he'd seen his toothbrush, and he had the toothbrush stuck up his ass, or in the crack of his ass.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And my dad was in the territory a couple of times in Cleveland, Buffalo, and he goes, "I don't know if I like you running around with him."
Yeah, sure. And your dad could be pretty rough in the ribbon department too. Good Lord.
Yeah, he should talk, right?
Yeah, exactly. God. Thank God I was his friend. He never did anything to me, but oh my God. Johnny Valentine was a phenomenal, great worker. And they say he's probably one of the smartest guys ever.
Didn't he, one time when you had to pee really bad, drive off and leave you somewhere?
Yeah. He did that a bunch of times. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were eating jalapenos from Church's Fried Chicken, and they came in this cart that had the jalapeno juice in it, and he poured it in my lap. You know how hot that was, right? I mean.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was too much. The worst, though, was the worst, but the funniest was Nelson Royal, who was a, you met Nelson many times. sure. a local star in the Mid-Atlantic area, but a really good performer, good wrestler. And we went to Raleigh TV, which Greg remembers well, and they had these metal racks above the lights and the mirrors in the dressing room. And Nelson Royal would take his cowboy hat and put it upside down on the rack. So while Nelson was downstairs, John, did his business. He lined it with newspaper, thank God. But he did. Right. He took a dump in Nelson's hat and put it back up. So they called Nelson for interviews. He went upstairs. He took his hat to put it on, and there was,
oh no,
oh yeah, a pile of crap. Man, he came flying downstairs. It was a pull apart to get him off your dad. He was trying to kill your dad. He was just covered in crap. It was terrible. It was brutal. I mean, that's just one of many. I mean, God, we drive on the road. This is how rough the business was and how bad it was. And he would do the same thing in a Red Man tobacco pouch, right? And he would carry it in the back of the car. And while he was dipping Red Man, he'd be like fanning the odor from the from the tobacco pouch to the three people in the car. It was unbearable.
Actually, I don't think it was called Red Man. I think it was called Elephant Butts.
Yeah, whatever it was.
Some strange brand that he had. And he used to mix cow shit with it. And and he kept giving it to Buddy. You know, Buddy Roberts loved him, and they called him Dale Valentine for a while.
Yeah.
And he would mix. He mixed the cow turds with the tobacco. So Buddy, he was chewing tobacco because he idolized my father. He wanted to be just like him. He was chewing that tobacco for about 3 months. Yeah. And his breath was just terrible.
No, we're talking about the Buddy Robert that just got put in the Hall of Fame with the Freebirds. Oh, God.
Yeah, poor Buddy guy. He passed away, but that's what he did. They used to share a room, and Buddy would be sleeping, and my dad would take his cane. Because he had canes after, of course, after the plane crash, and he'd whack him right across the knees in the middle of the night.
I'm sure.
Tortured him.
Yeah. No, Buddy was funny. But at the end of the day, Buddy could perform in the ring.
And, he was great. He was great.
Yeah, and, he was that group with Michael, of course, being the star, and Terry Gordy being one of the really good workers in our business at that time, and Buddy, they were a great team. So
I went Terry to Hall of Fame this year.
I saw Buddy's son, who was really a nice guy, and it was really, really a cool occasion. Conrad was there. It was a really nice induction.
That's good.
And very well deserved, and I'm enjoying just being a fly on the wall for you guys. But, Mr. Valentine, your history goes back to with Rick to the Mid-Atlantic days, isn't that right?
Yeah, actually, me and Rick, we met in 75, and I didn't know that was the same Ric Flair I had to wrestling. And he had a bald head, and he was 300 pounds.
Yeah.
when they first put us together, it was a whole different Rick, skinny, not skinny, but not fat, long hair, and he had his gimmick together, the Nature Boy, and we're riding along. We've been together for a while, and he goes, "You don't remember the first?" I said, I said something about, "It's really nice to meet you, Rick, and being with you." He said, "Well, I met you a long time ago. You don't remember?" So he told me the story.
Yeah, I was the fat boy. No, I tell you what. Yeah. Greg
Stevens brought you down there to San Antonio or something. So.
Exactly. Yes, that's right. Actually, it was for Joe Blanchard, right?
Yeah, it was Joe Blanchard, and it wasn't, it was like 73, I think, 1973.
Yeah, 73, I had just started. I was with Dusty and Murdoch and Joe and Ray Stevens, yeah. I've got that picture tied to Dusty's house in Austin. But, that's the trip. That's the first time we met. But anyway, a lot of people don't realize this, but I did And I think it worked for us. I think Greg was happy with the time, but I found a place called Franco's that Greg and I invested a lot of money in Richmond, Virginia, for clothes, man. We lived our gimmick. It was the beginning.
Yeah.
It was the beginning of the gimmick.
Yeah, and you still wear the suits, and I don't anymore. I got a couple of them, but, you know, I tried to go with that for a while. And finally, I said, I can't wear these suits anymore. But I went to New York by myself. But I would wear them to, you know, the garden and stuff like that. So, yeah, we had shirt ties. I mean, we looked. And my dad did that for years, too.
Old-time guys did, remember? They'd come to the
You didn't do it in the Carolinas, but you were in a big city. Yeah. I just saw Rick last week in Buffalo, and he had – did you have a shirt and a tie, too?
I didn't have a tie, but I always try to wear a sport coat, yeah.
Yeah, it looks good. You know, it's a living the gimmick. You look like a champion. It's very good, and I'm doing more of that, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, the fans, I think, and I feel like they want to see you and remember you from, you know, when they watched you, no matter what decade it was. I mean, so I feel like it's important to give them at least a little bit. They're paying that kind of money for your autograph and picture, to give them a little bit of what they grew up on. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I try to dress nice all the time. But,
short of wearing one of your robes in there, that would really be hard.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg.
Well, no, the robe deal, I saw Rick doing it. I had a plain old black robe, and then I kept upgrading mine. But that was, we were the only guys that, Rick actually was the first one, and I was number two.
Yeah.
To wear them flamboyant rhinestones that we got from Johnny Walker's wife, Olivia's pastime.
Yep.
God bless her. But I mean, these were fantastic robes.
Yep. Well, and then Orndorff jumped on after that. Remember, Paul jumped on.
Yeah, a lot of guys got jackets and stuff, but they weren't like what we had.
Especially you.
And then I actually ended up buying one of your robes that you never bought. She sent it down to me, and it was so damn heavy, I hardly ever wore it. You had all kinds of jewels stuck on that.
Yeah, she loaded them down. People don't realize Conrad has several robes in his home, and it's amazing to think that we carried those around. You couldn't check them because all the people stole them in baggage claim. You know what I mean? So.
I remember one time you exploded at the baggage because someone ripped your whole robe apart. Remember that?
Yeah, yes.
And it came down the carousel.
Yeah.
God, that was awful.
Yeah, I know.
We should have got him insured.
Yeah, you're right. Well, remember I got all my jewelry stolen in Greensboro that time, right? So I wasn't even eligible. That I had to get what's called an entertainer's rider on my insurance. It was like $5,000 a year, which was unheard of to insure jewelry. Because like myself, Greg, and several of the guys were wearing a lot of jewelry back then too. That we invested a lot of money in. But
yeah, we had Rolexes and shit.
Yeah. You know. Well, listen. The greatest story, what made me laugh the hardest, and I got to tell this, and then Greg can tell his side of it, but Greg and I traveled together extensively, especially when we were tag team partners. I think I would say we traveled together every day for at least 3 years, maybe four. The gig was that Raleigh TV was Wednesday morning. If you weren't there Tuesday night, you were in Columbia the night before. And sometimes we'd make a drive in Raleigh that night to catch the end of the party. But if we didn't, Greg and I were never on time. So we lived just a couple blocks apart, but we left late for Raleigh one day. And Greg's driving about 90 miles an hour up Highway 49 in his cop. It was two cops named Newton and Atwater. He pulled Greg over. And said, "You're going to jail this time, Valentine." And he took us back to jail. He put Greg in jail, and Greg gave me these car keys, and he said, you didn't bail me out. I said, no, I'm going to TV. Let your wife bail you out. I'm not going to get fired.
In my car. Yeah. I said, what the hell? He took off of my car, went and made Raleigh TV. I'm in jail. Luckily, I had another car, so I called Julia to come and pick me up.
Oh, man. That was priceless. He got the TV. It was this old jail, and I mean, they like put him in jail, you know. Like, these guys were, one night, Conrad, they wrote 13 tickets. Remember that, Greg?
Oh, my gosh.
Yep, that got tickets to the wrestlers. And they got Wahoo, Paul Jones, Rufus, me, Greg, Jardine. They got George Scott. I mean, everybody coming back from Raleigh one night.
Yeah, because they all took that shitty little 49 highway, because that's all they had, because the freeway took you longer.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I remember one time that I went up to Rick's room. Oh, no. What was it? Rick threw his mattress out of his room at the Hilton Hotel. Do you remember that, Rick? But he only threw the mattress, so.
That time.
But, you know, you listen to that Joe Walsh song about tearing up hotels and stuff like that. Well, we did that, you know.
Well, we just had fun. You know, it was
nothing. Yeah, we had
fun. And it, you know, it wasn't anything, it was never any violence or anything, but we did have a lot of fun. We enjoyed, I think we made the most through the notoriety. And, God, back then, if you were a wrestler for Jim Crockett Promotions, you were a huge personality in the Southeast. Would you not agree with that, Greg?
Yeah, and they had this great club in this Hilton Hotel in Raleigh, and they had the Buckinghams and people like that that had a name.
The Embers used to come over there.
The Embers. Yeah. And it was fantastic, and all the people would come and hang out with us, too. And, it was big time. I mean, Raleigh, North Carolina is not a big town, but there's universities all over the place. And so it is a big town. In a way, you know, a lot of kids and stuff, and they love the wrestling. And wrestling back in the mid-Atlantic days was the only pro sport besides car racing, and that was it. There was car racing, there was religion, and then there was basketball with Michael Jordan. That was it, and then there was us, you know.
Yep, that was it. I mean, I think at that point in time, it was as much us as it was ACC basketball. I mean, we were huge. The Embers, the Hilton was the best gig in the world. That's where one night, you know, I was there, Greg and I, and everybody were drinking, right? And this guy walked up to me and says, "This place is a lot of fun." I said, "Hell yeah, that's a lot of fun." He said, "Any women here that'd like to do anything?" I said, "Pick one out. I'll make it happen for you, buddy. What do you got?"
Okay, I know where you're going.
It was a private eye my wife hired to follow me.
do you remember the time you dressed up like a woman?
Of course.
And you came down to the bar?
Yeah.
And you sat right next to me, and I didn't know who you were. I didn't know it was Rick.
Yeah, I put my hand
on Jesus, this girl's good looking, but her nose is kind of big.
No, we tried to fake out Ray Stevens, remember? Oh, God.
Yeah. Ray Stevens tried to hustle you.
Yeah, I was dancing with Greg out on the floor. He didn't know it was me. That's some serious marijuana, man. That poor Joyce, I gotta give Joyce a shout out. She was a manager at Hilton Hotel. God, they went through a lot of crap with us. Jesus Christ. The good old days.
I'll
never forget that, because when I got served those papers, They served Mulligan, Wahoo, you, and all the others that sheriff served them all the same morning to be in court to testify. And Mulligan called me and said, listen, I like you, but I'm going to beat the shit out of you. I ain't going down to that courtroom and talking about my life in Raleigh, North Carolina, just because you bought the private eye some drinks and tried to get them laid. I go, okay, Jack, don't worry. I'll fess up. I'll take the heat. Everybody, my phone blew up. George Scott, Greg, everybody called me because they all got served to go to court to testify about what went down in Raleigh unless I just admitted to it all. So, of course, I went to the gas chamber for a couple days, but that's okay. I didn't want Mulligan punching me out.
So, hey, Rick, do you remember this one? For some reason, we were all going to Corpus Christi to wrestle.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to go through Houston first, and Mulligan was on the flight. I was on the flight. You were on the flight. I don't remember who else it was. But all of a sudden, I'm half asleep, and I wake up, and the captain goes, serving drinks along with our stewardesses, Nature Boy Ric Flair. And he was pushing the cart down and giving drinks out, and he had his robe on. Do you remember that, Rick?
Of course I remember. That was Eastern Airlines. They had a sense of humor.
He went all the way, he went through the whole deal, and I don't think Rick had anything on underneath the robe.
No, of course he did. Hey, I'm taking flying lessons now where I can wear the robe because I'm going to be the captain of my own plane.
Oh, wow. God.
Are you going to fly with me?
Yeah, we did a lot of flights with Freddie where we'd hire a private plane, take us to these long shots. And, you know, Rick talked about the plane crash and everything, but he's still got in those little planes. But we trusted Freddie.
Yeah,
I remember one time.
We got him divorced.
Yeah.
He was divorced in 6 months. He actually became me and Greg's private pilot because
he was so private.
Yeah,
he had a little single engine plane. And remember, he couldn't get it started. One time we're trying to go back home to Charlotte. He gets out there and Rick pushes the starter button. He gets out there and hand cranks the propeller to get it going. And then we get in the plane and fly home. Now, tell me that ain't. That's like World War II, you getting out there or World War I cranking your own.
Jesus. You think we're ahead of our time, Conrad?
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I'm telling you, you're trying to bring Greg into the Conradison for a party, man.
Hey, so you guys have mentioned him a couple of times. I want to know some more Ray Stevens stories. I know that's a guy that was a big influence on Rick. And, Mr. Valentine, I know you're familiar with Ray and probably have some good stories. What can you share with us about Ray Stevens?
Well, he was tremendous. And they tagged me up with him. Rick was on the other side. And so we were the heels and put their tag team belts on us. Ray would just laugh and tell stories, and he was just a happy-go-lucky guy. So he always had this pit bull named Willie Nelson, and he'd bring him on the trips with us. And he had this big Lincoln that had this big dashboard that stuck out. So one time I didn't ride with him. I rode by myself with the wife, and I brought out my Alaskan Malamute Bandit, and he's walking around in front of the Ray Stevens' car, and the pit bull went nuts, and he chewed up Ray Stevens' dashboard. I didn't know what was going on. All I know is when Ray came out and looked at his dashboard, it had big hunks and stuff ripped. That pit bull was so strong, he just ripped that dashboard apart on that Lincoln Continental. Oh, my God.
Hey, guys, make no mistake. We've talked about Harley Race being crazy and fun and driving a car 100 miles an hour. Everything Ray had to be the fastest. He had back in the 70s, he had a Polaris snowmobile that would go 120 miles an hour.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, he had to have the fastest car, the fastest boat, the most guns. Am I saying that right, Greg? I mean, every car, everywhere he traveled, he carried about 3 guns on him. It was a different time. I mean, he obviously didn't wear them out in public and that, but Ray would say, "I'm ready for any kind of action." So, man. He only went to the 6th grade.
Well, really?
Yeah, he started wrestling in L.A. for LaBelle?
Yeah.
When he was 15 years old.
Roy Shire.
No, Roy Shire was LaBelle was L.A.
Michael Bell is L.A. Okay, right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he was a great guy. I mean, when I first saw Ray, I thought to myself, and to this day, I think he's the greatest performer I've ever seen. And he just owned the locker room. He was so charismatic. I mean, he just, one of these guys never worked out, smoked and drank like crazy. But, man, when he got in the ring, he was just, I never knew anybody like him, Greg. That's my personal opinion.
Well, and his work was so good. He's the one that really taught me how to roll with a bump, where you take the bump instead of just hurting your back, you just roll with it, and you come right back up, and you're right back up standing.
When did you start taking bumps?
Well, the occasional ones. The occasional ones, but I cut them off. When I went single, I cut them off. I tried to do that one that Rick does all the time in the corner. I almost broke my neck, so I ain't doing that one again. But a sad thing with Ray was I was with him when he dived out. He just dived out of the ring, and he tore his groin.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I think that finished his career. He couldn't. It was such a bad tear.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
The only one I've seen that bad, and I think you were in the WWF at that time, was when Ron Simmons tore his back in the 90s. When Ron was out for a year with, how big and strong Ron is in those.
Oh, my God.
He tore his groin, and Ron literally couldn't do anything. I think it was almost a year, and that's, for a groin tear, that's how bad it was. They're very, I've never had one, knock on wood. But I hear they're extremely painful. So,
I had one, but it wasn't bad. It healed up in about a couple months. But that's why it was really, I couldn't believe, how bad Ray tore his. And oh my God, So you never had one, but you had a broken back, and you had a gallbladder operation. I remember that. And you came right back. He had the gallbladder operation. I thought, well, he'll be gone for a week. The next day, he was in the ring.
Oh, 2 days. They didn't give you a choice back then. People don't understand it. I mean, I remember when David was born, I was in Minneapolis. I flew home, and I said to call George Scott, and I said, George, I just need to stay one day. He said, if you're not in Raleigh by 5 o'clock tomorrow, you'll be starting in Memphis for Jerry Jarrett. It was the truth. Yeah, that's the way they talked to us, right, Greg? Man, we had double shots, man. They want to know why we had to have some fun. My God, we drove 3,000 miles a week, and we're talking about Raleigh, but we went from Raleigh to Norfolk, which was equally as much fun, from Norfolk to Richmond, which was just as much fun, if not more fun, than either Raleigh or Norfolk. And then we would go home 300 miles, and we'd go to Greensboro that night. It was only 90 miles, and we'd tell our wives that we had to stay overnight for a meeting. We wouldn't even go home.
Yeah, we had a meeting, all right. Rick was up there. We had a bar up there on the top of the penthouse, and Rick was up there dancing on top of the bar. I remember that.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, my God. At one time, me, it was Rick, myself, George Scott, the booker, and Jimmy Crockett, the promoter, and we're going to go fly to Dallas and go duck hunting with Bob Geigel. And we go on to Dallas, and we go to the hotel and started drinking, and all of a sudden we decided we're going to go to Vegas. And we got on an airplane. They had late flights back then, 1 a.m. or midnight to Las Vegas. And we took off first-class tickets right to Vegas. And we stayed there for 3 days. And Jimmy Crockett never slept for 3 days. He just walked around and kept gambling. Remember that?
Of course.
And I won't tell all the stuff that went on there, but oh, my God.
that was just the 70s. That wasn't even the 80s yet.
Yeah, that was the late 70s. Yeah, that was the way. I mean, we started our deal in 76, you know, and we were off and on partners until probably 84, because in 82, I came back, or 83, I get mixed up on the dates, and you asked me to be your partner. I was a heel, and you were the big baby face then. And so we went against Ole and I believe it was the Sheik, and Gene was managing.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't tag Rick in, and Rick's bleeding all over the place, and I kept giving him a shorthand. I wouldn't tag him, and it was a setup, so I came in, and Gene pitched me this cane, and he says, break it over his nose. And I go, I'm looking at this thing. I said, God, I don't know how I'm going to break this over his nose. This sucker is like a baseball bat. But no, it never broke, Rick. Your nose.
No, my nose broke though. Jesus
Christ. But yeah, so I hit him and all this crimson's on his, I hit him over the forehead and it would just slide down and hit the bridge of his nose. So I tried it again and nice. And it didn't do again. And then Gene Anderson kept yelling, break the cane. So yeah. I grabbed it again and I came down and this time it hit Rick right on. Well, he started moving, of course. He yelled at me, you stop it, bitch, don't try to do that again. And he's trying to get away. And you're being held down by the Sheik and Ole. And so I hit your nose, and it slid right down and busted you in the mouth. I saw blood gushing out of your mouth. I go, oh, my God, what have I done? And I...
Yeah, just another day at work, Conrad. little different than what you're watching on TV today. So Greg,
yeah, so it was all realistic, and they came and had an ambulance and took you off to the hotel. Hospital.
Well, you know what I tell a lot of people is my favorite story about Greg and I and our matches is we had this long-running feud with Orndorff and Snuka, and Greg and I were the heels, right? We were really hot at that time. And the rib was because at that time Snuka weighed about 270, and Orndorff's finish was the jumping pile driver, which was perfectly safe. But that Jimmy coming off the top rope with that splash was brutal. So I got the two-headed coin, and Greg and I would flip the coin to see who was going to take the splash from Snuka.
Oh, God, it was horrible, that splash.
Oh.
A couple times he'd miss you, and his head would hit your head, you know?
I know, God, are you kidding? Well, when he started the business, he weighed 220, but he got really heavy in Charlotte before he went to New York. And that damn splash up a top rope would kill you. Me with my broken back, it didn't hurt me. But to this day, even if I, like when I had that ladder match with Edge, if I land flat or something lands on me hard and I'm on a hard surface, I can still feel it.
I'll tell you, that reminds you of a story that me and you were wrestling Wahoo and Andre the Giant. Remember, they used to bring in there.
Yes.
So we would come in and Rick would take a slam and I would take a slam and we all take slams. Rick could take a slam more than I could, but my back would start hurting. So then one time he gave me the giant swing and we're in Dorton Arena in Raleigh and they don't have any padding around the ring. And somehow I slipped out of Andre's hands, and I went over the top rope. Luckily, I landed flat on my back, but I was completely knocked out. All I remember is I'm waking up, and there's Flair over the top of me, you know, like giving me air and slapping my face, trying to wake me up, and he's laughing his ass off. He says, are you still alive? And he grabs me, and he stands me up, but I can't walk. I can't move. You remember that, Rick?
Of course I do. People don't understand. But I can guarantee you, you were in the ring the next day. There was no days off. Oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, Virgil came down and helped me and walked me back to the dressing room. And, you know, I'm 27, 28 years old. I'm healed up the next day, but I'm still hurting, you know.
Yeah. Jeez. Oh, I know.
If that would happen right now, you know, forget it.
Yeah. Well, hey, Greg, I think Conrad will probably ask this question if I don't. So one of the greatest matches I think that people remember in your career and one of the greatest matches of that kind ever, tell Conrad and all our listeners about the dog collar match
with
Jim Piper. That was a fantastic match, man. You talk about brutality. Do you remember
Stargate? Yeah, absolutely. And people talk to me all the time about it. And I know Vince plays it on 24/7. It's all on kind of DVDs to everybody. And so, you know, I watched the match every once in a while just to refresh my brain on how good it was. But it was so unbelievably good. And me and Roddy might have talked about it for 3 minutes. I didn't know what the hell we were doing out there. All I knew is to, you know, work the collar thing. But it ended up just, there's no way you can, you know, pull a punch with a heavy truck car chain like that. I mean, if you throw it in the air, gravity kicks in and you're throwing potatoes back and forth. And, back then Piper's ear was mutilated because I used to beat on him in the ear with the U.S. belt. And then the dog collar thing, it turned out, you know, it was like, you know, it stood the test of time. It was a phenomenal match. I'm proud to be part of it. But, you know, I think that was the first hardcore match ever. I never did another one of those, but, you don't see hardcore guys even attempting to do that match because you can't duplicate it, you know, It was that good. Thank you, Rick. It was that good. Yeah.
No, it was that good. And I was thinking to myself, I got to go on after this damn thing. Christ, I'm looking at the curtain going, good luck with that one.
Well, you won the world title that night, too. So,
yeah.
You know, that was a great match. And you and Harley were always great. But I imagine it was a little hard to follow something like that. But you did it. And plus, when you won the championship, they went crazy. Yeah, that's right. But you won the belt that night, right?
Yes. Yeah.
World championship. Was that the first time?
Second time. First time was 81 in Kansas City. The second time was Harley in that. Remember the theme was a flare for the gold or something like that?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had it all together, and we had a tag team that was Steamboat and Youngblood against whoever was the tag team champion,
Canoodle
and Slaughter. So it was just a great card from top to bottom. And all the matches back then were just superb. And I remember one time being Rick, Wilmington, North Carolina did not have a building, but they had a big football stadium. And we flew in a helicopter. Remember that?
Yeah, of course I do. They almost killed us getting out of there.
We come in with a helicopter and land right. And it was Rick's idea, and I'm scared to death of this helicopter. It was a Whirlybird, one of those where it was just a round thing, and you could see your seat, and you could see the ground. You know, it wasn't enclosed like other helicopters. Oh, God. How did you get this into it?
Yeah.
Who paid for that?
I paid for it.
Oh, my God.
It wasn't that much money back then, but it was the idea of 10,000 people in that stadium, and that's the town that your father and I crashed in Wilmington, right? So I already had the history of the town, but we were that hot, Greg and I were that hot, and, man, we were both covered in blood, and well, we ended up, you know, winning the match, you know, illegally, of course. And the fans, so wild back then, Greg and I were literally running as fast as we could to get in the helicopter because the security wasn't getting what was going on. So Greg and I dove in the helicopter, and literally like you see in the movies, the marks were trying to jump up on those things that you'd step on before you go into the actual helicopter as we were taking off. It was hilarious. It was unreal. We used to have a lot of heat.
We all had Cadillacs. Yep. And Rick would say on the interviews, "We're going to become screaming down the road in our Cadillac. I'm the diamond ring Cadillac man." And then Wahoo would get pissed off. He says, "Damn, Rick." He says, "Now they know what we're driving." But you know what they would do? They would just throw rocks and bricks at our Cadillacs and bottles. And so me and Rick would draw straws to see whose car we would take. we knew it was going to get beat up.
Yeah,
you know?
God. But just funny, because it's so funny that we're talking about stuff, and I hope that everybody's enjoying this, but it was, the business was just so different. And I don't think I've had a guest on. We've had a guest on, Conrad, that wrestled in the 70s with me until today. But the 70s was a wild time in life for everybody, and we just had a lot. We were in the right place at the right time, had a lot of fun. We made a lot of money for that time, for that time in life.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. And you know, Rick, everybody talks about the 80s, you know, because WrestleMania won 80s. But it was really us from 75, 76, right up till 84 or something. That Mid-Atlantic area was hotter than anything. And we were drawing more money than they were in New York. And then they started plucking guys out of you know, because they worked, you know. Joy Scott sent me up there and started plucking guys out, you know, because yeah. We wrestled. We weren't both sitting in a ring where we put fingers in the eyes and pulled hair and pulled tights. And I mean, it was believable because it was pretty damn real. And 90% real. Holy Christ. I mean, we made everybody believe it. And we believed it ourselves, and that's why it was so successful, that Mid-Atlantic territory. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was a great time in life. You know, it's funny, Greg, you know, of course, went up to WWF and enjoyed a lot of success there, but, you know, seeing each other over the years and catching up, I mean, if you look at it, Greg, you're what, 65 or 66?
I didn't really want to bring that out. But.
Well, Conrad's always throwing me under the bus, my age, so I'm 67. Are you younger than me, right?
Yeah.
No, I know you're 6 months older than me. I'm going to be 67 next month, September the 20th.
Well, we'll have to have
and your birthday's in. Your birthday's in February, right?
February, something? Right, yeah. I'll be the big at 68. Whew. Jeez, I remember when Angela Mosca told me if I lived to be 30, I'd be overstaying my welcome. I was 24.
Yeah. But you're in good health, Rick. I'm in good health. And it must have been all that good living we did.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is, Greg, I looked at you the other day, and you don't look like you're hurting that bad. I see the guys. No. I mean, geez, you know, everybody from Ted DiBiase to, God name it, they've all got hip, Bret Hart hip replacements, knee replacements. I mean, Hulk has got two hip replacements and knee replacement. Teddy's got two knee replacements. Bret Hart's got two. I'm trying to think of the guys of our era that are the same. No, well, actually, Bret's considerably younger than you and I, but I mean, a lot of the guys got banged up really bad. It's the business, you know. Look at Mick Foley. I'll use him as an example. Poor Mick can hardly walk.
Oh my God!
Yeah, he can hardly
look
walk.
Look at the matches he had. Well, yeah. I'm so lucky. You know, the only thing I ever tore was a quad, and that was a partial tear, and that's fixed up 5 years ago. My knees are fine. My back's fine. Knock on wood. You know, I could still wrestle. I'm very blessed. I'm healthy. Thank God, you know, because these are the best years for me, because I'm calmed down to where I can actually enjoy life and think about the past and enjoy myself without having all this testosterone backed up inside me, you know?
So yeah, I have to go out and beat somebody up. I'm actually experiencing the first time. It's very, very hard. And I've told Conrad this privately, and I've said it to many people. It's so hard to unwind from this kind of a living and to be normal, you know, and I'm glad you found that piece. I finally have, but it took me 64 years to find it. And that was,
well, you know, but Rick, you enjoy getting out and doing the autograph things, right?
Oh yeah. I love that. Of course.
That keeps you, you know, I love doing that. I got another one this weekend in Chicago, and I like that because that puts you out there, you meet all these people, and we got a lot of great fans, and it keeps you on the road, but you don't have to take bumps for it, but, you know, it keeps you going. You gotta keep moving, you gotta keep getting out there, and I
totally agree with that. What I'm saying, I don't miss not going to the bars every night. I mean, if you think about it, we went to a bar every night, 365 days a year for 20 years. Am I? At least I did. I'm pretty sure I can vouch for you.
Yeah, because you know, I would get up early in the morning, catch a flight, and then go, and then probably take a nap in the afternoon, or I'd go to the gym, and then I'd go wrestle, and I'd go. I can't wait to get to the hotel and go to sleep, but it never happened.
Of course, not.
I'd be down in the bar, and then I'd end up in somebody's hotel room, and partying with the guys, and then we'd go to bed at 4 and get up at 7 and catch another flight, you know?
Oh, nobody gets
it. God, so I didn't sleep for 20 years, probably, you know?
Well, I said, when you weren't answering the phone, as we were calling this morning, I said, man, we may not be able to reach him till 1 or 2.
No. I got up at 8 o'clock this morning. I got your fiance's text. I just didn't text it back. I was waiting, and I went upstairs to get some coffee, and I heard the phone ring, and so I missed it. But I've been awake since 8. I get up at 8. I live on the beach, and I go to bed at midnight.
You guys were both with Wahoo a lot back in the day. Do you have any memories of traveling or working with Yahoo that people might like to hear about?
Oh, my God. We don't even know where to begin. I'll just tell you I was going to tell this story earlier. Greg, we would do promos, of course, and we'd all be in the same room. We were wrestling Jack Mulligan in Wahoo, and I did my thing, and Greg goes, what's that big fat Indian going to do? And that dumb cowboy. Wahoo.
But they would take it to heart.
Huh?
They would get mad. They would take it to heart.
Oh, I know. Greg, that big fat Indian can't beat ever an athlete like me. Oh, Jesus. And man, Wahoo would come across that room. I thought it's going to punch Greg every time.
Yeah, Mulligan ran after me one time with a big fist of his, and I threw a table in front of him and ran out the door, and the George had to come out in the parking lot and talk me to come back in. I said, Mulligan's going to beat me up. There ain't no way I'm going to fight somebody. I'm 6'9", and he had the biggest fist I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, listen, and Jack Mulligan was double tough. Jesus Christ.
Oh.
Jesus.
Oh, my God. Wahoo, the matches, I remember the matches I had with Wahoo, and he would just beat the living shit out of me and Rick, and our chests would be bleeding, and then George Scott would come in and say, here, just pour rubbing alcohol on your chest. So we did that.
Neil Sporn.
And Neil Sporn, but the rubbing alcohol turned our chest into nothing but massive scar tissue. And so every time we got hit, it would break open again. And I still got scar tissue to this day from Wahoo beating me up.
Oh, yeah.
And,
well, not only did he beat you up with his hands, I tell people this, Conrad, and people go, yeah, right. But Greg can validate it. When these Indian strap matches, which I had a ton of, as did Greg, he would throw you in the rope and he would and throw you into the rope for you to come running off, and he would hit you in the face as hard as he could, not in the chest, in the face with that damn leather strap, right, Greg?
Yeah, oh, man, well, sometimes so sometimes his chops would hit you in the face.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember one time I finally started sticking up for myself, and I nailed him as hard as I could between the eyes, and he looked at me, and his knees buckled a little bit, and he came up to my wife at Bennigan's later on. He didn't look at me. He looked at my wife and goes, "Your husband's one hell of a man." But he liked that I threw that potato right between his eyes, but yeah. So I learned how to, and I know Rick did too, we learned how to chop from him, so we started throwing chops back.
Yeah, jeez. Yeah, but Wahoo is not only a farmer,
but he was the best. He had he had this hangnail on his thumb or one of those fingers that would tear your skin apart.
Yeah,
on that right hand of his. Oh my God!
Well, his right hand was like a catcher's mitt anyway. Big, huge hands, and he used to beat. I tell you, the guy he used to beat to death was Greg's dad, Johnny Valentine. He would beat Johnny. He would hit him 20 times, and John would do that. And John would just fall forward. Boom.
He would fall down and roll his eyes behind his head there, you know, so just see the whites of his eyes. He'd hang his tongue out, like, and it was purple, and the people on the front row were thinking he was dying, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But he probably was almost dying, but he'd love to get beat on.
Yeah. Well, he was a great guy, and I just learned a lot from him. I remember I've told this story, and people have heard me say it, but he refused to let anybody throw him from rope to rope. He'd look at me and say, "How can someone throw you or throw you across the rope? I mean, if in real life,
right?
How can someone throw you ropes?" But he was the only guy that got away with it. He wouldn't run across the ring to a turnbuckle. He wouldn't do anything. He'd be hollering at me when I was just a kid learning Wahoo. He'd throw me around, beating me up, bouncing me around, boom. And John would go, "Nobody believes that." I said, "Well, Wahoo does." And I'm not telling him no. Jesus. But John, well, guys, on his truth, he would not let you whip him from rope to rope.
I was trying to do that. Yeah, I didn't want to hit the rope. So what I did is I just cut it in half. So a guy would grab a headlock on me. I'd throw him off, and I would let him take the rope, or I would do the rope and come off and hit him instead of doing the crisscross. Cause that was pretty unlogical, but, just throwing off the rope that one time is no big deal. And we were in a different era, and my dad was the only guy that could get away with grabbing some guy in the arm and hang on to it for 20 minutes, you know?
I know.
They would tell us that we're lazy. Get up there. You got to move. But we found a happy medium, of course, and we were very successful doing it.
Well, listen, man, we have kept you for a long time. I cannot thank you enough.
How long have we been going? At least 40?
No, yes, sir.
40 minutes.
We're nearly an hour, and I know Rick wants to wrap it up, but I do want to ask
an hour,
one more question.
Hour Broadway. All right,
almost an hour Broadway. Let's get us there with a question about the Andersons. Rick and Greg, I think a lot of folks who are younger fans really just think of the Andersons as Arn Anderson, but back in the Mid-Atlantic days, man, Gene and Ole were tearing it up. Can you guys share some of your favorite memories about the Anderson brothers back then?
Well, they were a phenomenal team, make no doubt about it. They had a fairly unusual style, too. I mean, they did bump around, but they were a wrestling team, and they were the kind of guys that would grab a hold, and they'd stay on, and preferably an arm, and they'd stay on the guy's arm in a tag match, and very similar to what Greg's dad would do. But, of course, they bounced around for the guys that made the comeback, but they were probably as traditionally a good wrestling team as there was. I think Greg and I had equally as much ability in wrestling, but we brought a lot more flash and glamour to it And Ann Anderson's were just playing, you know, Ole's, I can remember Ole's interview now. Hey, if you're a truck driver or whatever you got going on, you don't think this is real, come on downtown. You give me a trick.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Rick, when they first tagged us together, they were the world tag team champions, and we finally beat them for the belts. But they would, me and Rick would wrestle them like 50 minutes every night. I mean, it was a long, drawn out, and they just beat the hell out of me and Rick. But they gave us an education. We really learned from that experience how to, you know, how we were already tough, but we really became tough after that because working with those two guys. And
yeah, and what they, Greg said, he said 50, not 15. 50 minutes.
No, we were almost an hour every night.
Yeah.
And then I think when we did get the world belts, we did a couple hours with them. And then they got the belts back. And then I think Rick and myself were world tag team champions three different times. I know that for a fact. And it was mainly against Ole and Gene, Steamboat and Youngblood, and probably Stars and Canoodle. And then you mentioned Orndorff and
Jimmy.
Who was the other guy? Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah.
And, yeah, God. So we wrestled everybody, Mulligan and Wahoo in tag matches, Andre the Giant and Wahoo in tag team matches, and the world belts, tag team belts, was not a semifinal. It was the main event when me and Rick were together. So,
yeah, it was. Well, we were in a good position, and we learned a lot, and guys like Wahoo don't exist anymore. I mean, he was just, and he legitimately, I mean, he wanted to make money, but he legitimately wanted us to get better and learn our craft. And I thought Wahoo was a tremendous teacher as well. He did a lot.
Yeah, God bless Wahoo and God, all those guys back then. It was just great.
Yep. It was a great time of life. You got any more questions there, C-Man?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to get one more plug in there for Paul Jones and Jay Youngblood. I think they were kind of unsung heroes of the Mid-Atlantic era that maybe younger fans aren't familiar with. And I know you guys had some feuds with them when you were tag-teaming with and against each other. Can you guys tell us any stories about Paul Jones or Jay Youngblood?
Well, I only wrestled Paul a lot in single matches. I did wrestle Paul with Steamboat when Paul was teamed up with Rashke.
Right.
Do you remember that? And we did really well with that when I turned and went with Steamboat against Jones and Rashke. We did great with him, but I know that Greg and I loved working with Steamboat and Youngblood. God, they were a hell of a team.
Yeah, that's who I remember more.
Right up our alley.
Yeah. But I remember Paul Jones. I did a lot of singles with Paul Jones, too, because I had the U.S. and the Mid-Atlantic belt. I just saw Paul Jones a couple of weeks ago in Charlotte, and they gave him some kind of reward. But all he could talk about was the matches he had with Johnny Valentine. Yeah. And how Johnny would just beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, he did.
But Paul had a pretty stiff punch himself. And you know, they worked. I think Paul Jones probably worked with Johnny Valentine more than he worked with me and Rick and Tag or anything like that. Rick is right. There's mainly Youngblood and Steamboat and the Andersons and Snooker and Orndorff and I'm leaving out somebody else, but Piper, maybe, not Piper, but yeah.
We wrestled Piper in tag matches as well. We lost to Hot Rod last year, but Roddy was a big part of both mine and Greg's life. So, once again, Roddy, you'll never be forgotten, man.
Yeah, and I know you made the funeral, and I didn't make it. I can't remember why I didn't make it, but good God, you know, I was there in spirit, and I had just seen Roddy in Detroit a month before that, and then 2 weeks before that he passed away, I did his podcast, and, then I went to Charlotte, did the fan fest there, and they told me Piper just passed away, and I went upstairs and threw up all the rest of the day, so it was just like, it was terrible.
It was hard for all of us, man. He was a great guy, but part of a big part of the 70s.
And Dusty passed away too, right after that.
So. Yep. No, Dusty passed away a month before.
Is that all that happened? Okay. Yeah. That was
you knew Jack Mulligan passed away, 3 months
ago? That was devastating. I heard that too. That was devastating. Yeah. And
he'd been sick for so long.
I saw him in Orlando for that WrestleMania where all your ex-partners came out and saw you on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah.
And I came out and said that. So he was in the audience and he saw me and he started crying. And God bless him, he started crying because he was just thinking about all the memories, and he used to live two doors down from you, and he brought up all that, and oh my God, a lot of good memories that always
special time and special people.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to catch up and listen in and be on the fly on the wall today, Mr. Valentine. We appreciate you taking time out of your morning and talking to us a little bit here on the show today.
Greg, stay in touch, man.
Yeah, we'll see you down the road, Rick, and thank you guys so much for having me on.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
You were a great guest. Thank you so much, Greg.
Thank you, sir.
You bet. All right. Bye-bye.